Unspoiled Network Podcast.
This is Some Spoiled Hot D, House of the Dragon, Return to Westeros, HBO sort of spoiled edition. Uncut, uncensored, and too hot for TV. Bringing you the greatest hits from 2022. Do not call in with your requests. In this episode, which is titled The Rogue Prince, we have got a sort of, like, somebody who's been said to be the heir, but is not being treated as the heir in any significant way, stepping in and then and doing heir shit. And people just have a problem with it. Welcome to Unspoiled. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Natasha.
I'm Rashawn.
I have to right out of the gate, guys. We're trying Zencaster again. I think we figured out some of the problems we ran into last time. Some of you may have noticed that there were odd moments where Rashawn might start laughing while I was talking and you suddenly couldn't hear what I was saying. And I believe we have figured out how to fix that problem and we are good now. So knocking on my melamine desktop, extremely loud on the mic, I'm sure. But yeah, I'm excited to be able to, you know, use these again. Truly the main draw for me.
You're really only on this podcast to play with the soundboard.
I need to start downloading like specific House of the Dragon sound bites, but I'll work on that. But yeah, this episode we got the opening credits and they are just going with the same song.
Yeah, right. So I liked the credits. It's funny. It's like, it's very, very inspired by the original series, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the sort of like, clockwork, you know, part of it.
Right.
But clearly much more blood is involved. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It almost looked like sealing wax to me.
Oh, which, that's funny.
And like the tops of like the little areas where the sigils are, mm-hmm, looks like the rings that you use to press into sealing wax. Mm. So I kind of felt like they were trying to do a sort of like, yeah, it's wax and it's blood. Like, right, how, mm-hmm, like Tywin Lannister is like, wars are won with pens and quills or inks and quills, whatever it is he says.
I was surprised. I appreciated that they used the original theme in the premiere because that felt like, okay, yeah, we're going to do that, right? Mm-hmm. We all know what brought us here, right? We're going to, little respect, little homage. But that they chose to just go with the same theme, I am, you know, it's not the end of the world. I was a little disappointed because I thought it'd be cool to get, like, another entry, mm-hmm, into this, mm-hmm, you know, canon of music. And the composer is so good, whose name I know, but for some reason I'm blanking on.
We always do this. Ramin. I'm going to look it up right now.
I was looking forward to seeing what he might have wanted to do for this, you know.
Ramin Djawadi. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm not positive. It's Djawadi. But yeah, that's basically how I felt. I was like hoping to see something new and awesome from him. And while there's certainly, I think, original new music in the score,
in the episode, yes,
yeah,
yes.
But I was really looking forward to something for this show in particular, and a little disappointed. Like, it's not the end of the world, like you said, and I'm not mad about it or anything, but I was sort of like on tenterhooks waiting for it, and it just didn't really.
Yeah, it would have been cool to have an additional entry into like this iconic, you know, series as far as music is concerned.
Yeah,
but so we got the new credits, we got the soundtrack for mm-hmm. the opening theme, and then it just opens with a close up on just. Some dudes are having some bad times. Mm.
Yeah, there's the close up is on somebody's hands that have been nailed to maybe it was a deck, maybe it was a wall, a bulkhead, I guess is what you say on a boat. But it is a scene of like complete destruction.
Yeah.
And then there's a dude who he is the one who I think has his hand nailed in place. He wakes up because the crabs are starting to eat him, mm-hmm. but his hand is nailed so that he can't move.
Right. And this is the crab feeder that we had been hearing about, these sort of these pirates out mm-hmm. Over at the Narrow Sea, I guess.
Yeah.
And this becomes a big part of this episode, too, this reference to the Stepstones over and over again and what's happening over there. And we find out that Corliss has actually lost a ship now.
Yep.
And not just a ship, but a ship that had his banner, which is like extra rude.
Yeah, that is a personal insult.
You know, like, fuck your banner. We don't care. We know who you are. We still don't care. So that is, you know, wildly disrespectful. And he is hoping for some justice. And like a lot of black men, when we go to the white man for justice, we do not get it.
It's true. Which results in him having to go to a different white man. A whiter man, actually, one could reasonably say.
The and that's whitest. How we end up making deals with the devil.
And we also find out that they have to get like a new head of the Kingsguard.
Yeah, new Kingsguard. There's not going to be the head because our boy Harold is going to be the head now.
Oh, that's right.
And they need to add an additional person to the guard. And we find out in this episode that Harold is a Westerling because they drop his name. So that's fun, right?
Yeah. My man Harold. My boyfriend. It is so crazy, Rashawn, aging and then realizing that your like tastes have aged up with you, which doesn't mm-hmm. happen to people like Leonardo DiCaprio.
You beat me to that joke. Have you seen like there's like the memes around?
Oh my god,
DiCaprio thing have just been outstanding. There've been so many good ones,
extremely but good. The... Owen showed me one the other day of the problem with Rose wasn't that she
that's right.
There was no room on the door, but she was 25.
Yeah, I saw that one too. That's exactly what I was going to mention. It was just like, yeah, there was room on the door, but and then under her picture, it just said 26.
Yep. But yeah, see, like him, and then we were watching Rebels the other day, which is one of the animated series for Star Wars, which is so good and way better than Clone Wars. And just, I'm really enjoying it. And you, spoilers, like light spoilers for this, you come across some old clones that have gone gray. And I have never been into the clones. And I see them all gray and grizzled. And I was just like, yo, what's up? Everything about it was doing it for me. They had a very Sir Harold look to them, to be honest. So I just had a moment of like, man, I really.
You do have a type.
I have a type, though. But yeah, this he comes in as they're talking about who they're going to replace on the Kingsguard and that they have like people assembled that they're going to look at. And Corliss comes in and is like, what the fuck? Y'all are sitting here just talking about some, oh, we need to find another They are burning our ships. They are ruining us. They are mm-hmm. going to keep doing this. And you are doing fucking nothing. And I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, it just calls him weak right to his face mm-hmm. practically. And, Otto. You know what? It's only the second episode, but I am already developing very strong feelings about a lot of these people.
Okay, good. Tell me.
Otto is a bitch. Right. Right? Am I wrong? Am I reading it wrong?
Define bitch in this case.
A whole bitch. All parts of bitch. In every way that you could mean that word. He is not to be trusted. He is duplicitous. He's low-key a coward. He's a social climber. He's a manipulator. All of those things.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I can agree with all that. Define bitch. A whole bitch. Ah. Clearer now. Yes.
But he comes in. Crows comes in and he's talking about, you know, not just the ships that he's lost, but he's like, oh, and your brother, though, you know, mm-hmm. has taken Dragonstone, which, if records are correct, is not where you told him to go. You sent his ass to some place called Runestone.
Yeah.
And he did not even go there. He went to another place and has set himself up as prince. And you're just sitting here dilly-dallying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's got his, like, you know, what is the word that what's his face used when he was talking about a woman that he wasn't married to, but he was, like, fucking, and it was supposed to be sort of a respect, not concubine, paramour.
Paramour.
Yeah. Paramour. And he is set up there, even though he's, like, married and everybody fucking knows he's married. And I just can't, if I was his wife, can you imagine the humiliation? Everybody knowing this, like, oh, I would be so devastated.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I can hope is that she's got somebody wherever she is that's just breaking her back down. So she doesn't even give a fuck about what he's doing. Like, that's what I hope is happening for her.
Just, like, even if it is, it can't, she can't be public enough about that without, like, you know, drawing some ire on herself to keep people's tongues from wagging about what he's doing to her.
I don't know. In my fantasy, she is just, like, as open about it as he is, even though I understand in this world that probably doesn't get to work that way for women in this world.
No, I don't think so.
But I...
Unless you're from Dorne.
Right. I choose to believe. And where is his wife from again?
Isn't she from Runestone?
I can't remember.
And that's why she's bronze, because that's their colors there.
Oh, maybe.
I don't remember. Sorry, everybody who's yelling at me.
So, yeah, I like to think of her as just living her best life, and every day she's just like, fuck Damon. Oh, he's doing what? Fuck him. I only liked him because he had a dragon in the first place.
I love that idea. It's just like, I was pity fucking him, actually, because he looks like a foot. Have you seen his foot face? Yeah, real problem.
So they're talking about what to do at the Stepstones, and Rhaenyra is doing her cupbearer duties in the background. Mm-hmm. And then she said what I was thinking. I think what we all were thinking, which is it was very difficult to watch this scene and have these men talk about the best way to handle what sounds like an insurrection that's happening over in the Stepstones. And, you know, kind of like, oh, wringing their hands, you know, we don't want to declare open war and all this stuff. And I was just thinking, but y'all got dragons, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just like a flyover. I feel like, you know, just a hey, just, you know, stopping by to see how y'all doing down there. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
And then she turns around and she's like, we'll send you dragon riders. And I was like, you're goddamn right. Mm-hmm. Send you dragon riders. What the fuck are you doing? And not to jump ahead, but I had the same exact thought at the end of the episode when they get the whole, and they go into Dragonstone and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about Damon, like, well, you know, he's got a, is it a Caraxes? No, yeah. His is Syrax. Hers is Caraxes. Or do I have that backwards?
Oh, no, I think you're right. I'm going to pull that up again so I have that in front of me.
And they're all just like, ooh, but he has a dragon, though. And I was like, so do y'all. What the fuck is happening?
So you're kind of getting to the heart of some of my issue with the way the show is written right now. And it's not necessarily like, this is the sort of thing that I feel like if you're just watching, it's not going to bother you the same way it does if you've read it. For the show, they have to make everybody much stupider than they actually are. In the books, a lot of these things are kind of, for example, if you need the audience to know that a certain thing is customary and he is choosing not to do the customary thing, and that is a big deal, you have to have a character explain to someone what's customary so that you can then watch the man do the thing that isn't and know, because you're not getting the background that you would in the book, right? And so in these scenes, sometimes they will have people like saying things that indicate really to the audience, like, is this man an idiot? Because he puts forth an idea that makes no sense, that doesn't work. And then somebody will point out the very obvious problems with it, but it still leaves character A looking like a dodo bird, because they allegedly wanted to do the thing that is foolish, you know? And the first episode, they kind of had that moment, like with Otto being like, you could have his tongue out for that, to let us know that the way that this guy addressed her as the queen who never was is kind of a fucked up thing to do right in front of the king. So they have to like have him say, and have Ceres be like, no, no, I'm not doing that, to really let us know the like overall vibe of what that was. And I feel like that with this, like the, all of the resistance that's being put up, it feels like false in a way. Like they're not, your response of, well, yeah, why wouldn't you? Am I crazy? Why aren't you doing the thing? It feels like they want to make her character the bold one. So she has to be kind of going against someone, really. Her actions always have to be a rebellion of some kind and like disobeying somehow. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, it's hard because I haven't read the book. I mean, I get what you're saying about how it seems like they're setting up this character for Rhaenyra to be. She needs a foil, it sounds like, is what you're saying.
That's right? The word I'm looking for. So
I'm assuming that didn't or wasn't necessary in the book.
It's just different. And I'm not going to get into a whole like play by play comparison, but a lot of the like arguments about how to do certain things are not really how those went. Mm. And it just, to a degree with TV, you're just going to have to do things differently because it's just different. But it can get frustrating where you feel like it's making characters look like idiots, you know?
I will say that my takeaway from this bit, from this whole episode, actually, is that not so much that the Viserys is not smart enough or even like bold enough to make these choices. These are choices that I feel like anyone would, like when Rhaenyra is like, we can just say dragon riders. I feel like that is like the most common reflexive answer, right? And like, why wouldn't you have that as your immediate go-to? So what my assumption is then, what Viserys is attempting to do or be, or what they're trying to tell us he's trying to do or be, is that he's trying to be a different kind of king,
right? Okay.
He's trying to, which is odd, not odd, because we just come off of a reign from Jaehaerys, which by all accounts was like bountiful and pleasant and peaceful, you know, and everybody flourished, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Viserys is trying to be a king that doesn't necessarily rely on the dragons to, as the whole thing.
Right.
As like, is like all that Targaryens have to offer. Right. And I think I'm basing some of that on his conversation that he has with her in the crypt when they're in front of Balerion. And he's sort of like warning her, you know, about how you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Viserys is trying to show restraint, which for me, I feel like, but why though? You got dragons. Who's going to restrain you? I keep bending them back. You know what I mean? So I think I get, at least I think I get what the show is trying to do here, what the show is telling me about Viserys. I don't know how accurate that's going to be, but that's my takeaway.
Gotcha.
From these first two episodes is that he has decided, no, I'm not going to hop on a dragon every time there's a problem. That is not going to be the extent of my rule, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And other people, Corlys, Rhaenyra, are like me sitting on the couch going, but why not though? Why wouldn't, this is what makes us special. This is why we rule. You know, what? Why are you trying to do this thing differently? It makes no sense to us. Right. You know? Corlys is like, at least the princess has got a fucking idea. I don't see y'all thinking about shit.
Yep. He is, he's clearly on her team in a lot of ways, despite the fact that his wife got like stepped over to give her the inheritance. Yeah.
And he and Corlys definitely seems like, and we get confirmation at the end when he's going to see Daemon that he is believes that showing force and using the dragons to show force is their sort of birthright, mm-hmm. and his by association to the House Targaryen and also by marriage, right?
Right.
So even though he doesn't have a dragon, you know, when he talks to Daemon later and talks about how they went to the sea and not the sky or whatever, but he is a man that says, no, we use what we have to show what the fuck we can do. Like, that's how you regulate.
Yeah.
You
know? Yep.
And it is just not, Viserys does just not seem to be interested in any of this.
Yeah, it's kind of, like, I guess he just wants to be seen as gentler and not needing to resort to that. Like, it's a, he's a liberal god. I'm just realizing.
What? He just wants everybody to go high when they go low.
Ew.
He wants to meet in the center of the aisle.
And it's working out really, really well.
It always does, right? Historically, that plan has never failed anyone ever.
God. All right. So I'm trying to like keep us on track because our last episode was how long?
It was long. It wasn't even a whole thing.
It wasn't the whole thing, guys. Right? It was so tragic.
Yeah. So this is when they... And it's Otto mm-hmm. talking about maybe the princess could be used, has, you know, other things she could be doing. And she basically gets summarily dismissed
mm-hmm.
And taken over to look at the gentlemen that are here for the Kingsguard position. Mm-hmm. And she's I just saw a meme like right before we started recording where somebody was just like, you could say whatever you want about Westeros, but whenever there's a plan happening, they're going to have their little sculptured men. They're going to have their little game pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got their figures.
Right.
Their minifigs that they painted.
So as she's standing outside and all the men are in the courtyard, each one that gets called up has his own little, like, avatar and he gets placed mm-hmm. in his... It's, like, why? But okay, it's fine. Like, we're looking at them in the face. We don't need little models of them. They're standing right here.
I found that so weird. They're wearing their sigils on their chest. You don't need an additional bookend or whatever that is.
It's so weird. And I wonder if there's like a whole fucking backstory about why this is a thing that happens in this world. But maybe they all have them. And so when you're planning a war council, and you need to position the men, you need to illustrate it. So each man automatically gets a little thing done for future reference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know. But
I mean, I guess. It's the kind of thing where it's like me justifying why I have all these little doodads for my planner.
Yeah,
I could
true,
say
right?
It does the thing. But like, I just wanted it.
Really, they just want them. They mm-hmm. want the little carved guys.
I like the idea that like every house sends multiples of this little figure to other major houses and they're like, just in case I ever come visit for something really important so that you have it. I did a little update. As you can see now, the horse has eyebrows and I think that really adds something, so we're doing a new one for the new generation.
It really gives the horse a sense of personality because of the eyebrows. And so she's looking over these men who are not particularly impressive, if you ask me.
No.
And she is also not impressed. And she straight up asks, has anyone even seen combat? Anyone here? And the answer to that is pretty much no, except Sir Kristen. And he shows up, and yes, he's been to battle. He's been in a couple of things over in Dorne, fighting a Dornish incursion. And
I think it's Crispin.
Is it Crispin?
Yeah, I think it's P. We'll see in a second.
Yeah. Sorry. We'll see in a second. I think the next is Cole, right?
Yeah.
Something Cole.
I think it's Crispin Cole.
I hope not. As much as I love Crispin Glover, I don't think anybody else should ever be named that.
I kind of agree with you.
And she decides, she picks him. And Otto says to her, quite frankly, this guy is nobody.
Mm-hmm.
He's, first of all, he's common born, but, you know, above that, he's nobody. He does no help to us. And there are several men here that come from powerful, wealthy families, and it would be smart to sort of align those families to us by placing them in the Kingsguard.
You're right. Which, it's Kristen. Sorry.
Thank you. which I thought was really interesting because I know being in the Kingsguard is a great honor. But I think this comes from almost everything I know about the Kingsguard from Game of Thrones and the books that I've read so far is almost exclusively through the lens of Jaime Lannister and then sometimes Tywin, right?
Okay.
So I don't think of, and with Tywin being is disappointed and disgusted with Jaime's choice of joining the Kingsguard for reasons that don't have anything to do with the Kingsguard, they're all about Tywin, right?
Right.
But I think that led me to believe that when you become part of the Kingsguard, you sort of do that thing where you give up your birthright, you know?
Yep.
You're not going to be the heir to whatever lordship your father has and not going to marry and all that shit, like a sort of like the Night's Watch in a weird way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't think that joining the Kingsguard could be really political in the way that Otto is discussing. Right? Like, it didn't occur to me that, oh, you join a Kingsguard and now my family is even more loyal because, you know what I mean? Like, I just never considered that in that way. So I thought that was really interesting. And there's also somebody throws out, I forget what scene it is, but Dondarrion's name, family name, gets thrown out,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool.
I'm looking to, and Cole's, because he doesn't, like, you know, come from a noble house, he just has this sort of, like, pillar, this, like, blank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His little figure is not anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I keep thinking about with this, honestly, and I don't know if I'm right or not, but there is something about all of these little things that they have decided to add. This, because this wasn't quite as extreme in Game of Thrones, I don't think. Every, like, single little ritual having its own particular prop for each person.
Right.
Including, like, that weird disc with the marble in it.
At the small council, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, are they trying to create, like, merch?
How funny would that be?
You know, are they going to come out with, like, oh, here's the small council marble disc thing? Yeah.
The scene where she's overlooking the knights, this table that these figurines or avatars or whatever are on is very ornate.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears to be specifically for this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Like the way it's designed. And then it's each, like there's branches that branch out and each little figurine thing is in a designated spot. Like there's these little circles sort of cut out.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
This is where it goes. Yeah, I'm wondering if just in this time, in Westeros, things were, I guess, tradition was a little bit stronger, you know, sort of tied to the older ways. And some of this stuff had fallen by the wayside by the time we come to Westeros 170 years later, you know?
Maybe. I mean, they didn't put together a new Kingsguard, did they? For us to watch.
Well, there was that scene in the throne room that was like pretty messy. It wasn't anything like this when Joffrey sends, what's his face? He like takes off his armor and storms off.
Oh, Barrack Dondarrion. Or yeah.
Selmy.
Barristan,
right?
Selmy, you're right. Barrack Dondarrion is.
And I think in the same like scene in the throne room, Joffrey just, does he make the Hound part of it? I forget who he names when Selmy leaves, but it wasn't like what we're seeing here. Like in this episode, this is very different than the energy we got in Game of Thrones the one time it kind of came up.
Yeah.
So she picks Kristen. Otto,
he is not impressed. And she is just like, look, man, he's the only one with combat experience. And there's obviously also this like major attraction because she basically like leans on the banister and like kicks her heel up behind her and starts twirling her hair.
She really does. She's just like giving a lot of, you know, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
How have you been? It's very nice to see you again, sir. also, like, no shade, we don't get to see all the other people, but like the other men that we kind of see a little bit of, none of them are nearly as attractive as Kristen is.
It's true.
You know, there's a couple of names. Malister feels like a name that we know.
Yeah, definitely.
But I can't like place exactly why I know that name. And Rhaenys is watching this in the cut. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like above them, looking over, just watching all of this, but she doesn't really say anything. But she's watching with just sort of a, there's only one close up of her expression, and it's just kind of, I think, hard to read.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the shot, she's blurred in the background, but you can tell that it's her and she's watching like the whole thing.
Yeah, there's a pretty difficult scene with her later on, which we could like kind of just talk about now. But if you want to wait until we actually get there, that's fine. So that we have the dialogue right in front of us.
Yeah, let's wait.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we have the scene with Alicent and Viserys, and he's telling her about his model. Yeah. Showing her his toys.
It turns out it is Valyria.
Mm-hmm. I thought that it was King's Landing.
Yeah.
I'm very
impressed that it's Valyria because I, you know, much more interested in seeing that. I've seen King's Landing.
That's true. That's fair. And there's this moment where something like falls and breaks and he like grabs her hand while she's picking up the pieces. And there's this awkward like look between the two of them. And you can see how like deeply uncomfortable she is.
Yeah. We should mention too that it's been about 6 months between the first episode and this episode.
Right. I totally forgot to mention that. Yeah there's a big time jump.
Yeah. This scene with him and Allison, when he is asking her about his own daughter, how has she been? And then he shares with her that, you know, it's difficult, that they barely even speak anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he is almost asking her to sort of be an envoy, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Which...
to almost be an envoy, except also don't tell her anything about the fact that he like
yeah,
this.
Oh, yeah. And she gently suggests, like, you know, you could go to her.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to her. And he kind of chickens out with, like, a little joke about, like, how terrifying 15-year-old girls are, and, you know, and, like, kind of laughs it off. But really, he is putting the onus on her here. Could you go do me this solid?
Mm-hmm.
And she does.
Yep, she does. It's a... He's just such a coward, man.
Yeah. Like, I was having a hard time trying to figure out what she really thinks about any of the things that are happening to her. Because as far as I recall, there's not a lot of time spent on what she thinks about any of this.
No.
Right?
Almost none.
She has a scene with Viserys. Two, actually, one where it breaks, one where she gives it back, or she's had it fixed for him. There's a scene at the Sept with Rhaenyra where they talk about praying, and she is basically, you know, trying to encourage her to reach out to her father. She's telling her that, you know, your father loves you, you are not going to be replaced. And then there's a scene with her father towards the end before he leaves for Dragonstone. But that's it. So I don't know what to make of this young woman. I don't know where she is. I know she is tearing the shit out of her fingers. So that tells me something. You know?
I mean, I feel like her body language is pretty obvious. This is sort of bringing up something that we were talking about in the the Discord chat about whether or not there's anything romantic between Rhaenyra and Alicent. And there are some people who really feel like there was a subtext to the like body language when they were together, that the two of them are into each other in a way. And that had occurred to me, but I wasn't really sure if that was like, because, you know, there's nothing really obviously like that in the story itself, but that is not to say that it couldn't have been like an oblique reference that I missed that maybe was supposed to be kind of a hint that the maester doesn't know what he's, or, you know, oh my God, they were roommates. But there is like a discomfort to her motions and her expression that for me makes it feel like she hates this and it hates every part of it. And him asking her not to tell Rhaenyra, it's like confirming to her what she knows this is, but was trying to tell herself it wasn't. And she hasn't told Rhaenyra because she knows somewhere inside that this is what it is. But she was like, maybe it won't come to anything and I won't have to deal with it. And as it turns out, it is very much something she is going to have to deal with.
I know that they showed us the situation with her fingers before some of the plot that we're witnessing is in play, right? Before Emma dies and her father asks her to go and comfort the king. So she has a history of harming herself in this way, picking at her fingers, that isn't necessarily tied to the specifics that we're watching now.
Right.
It makes me think that she has a history of repressing, you know, everything in order to be dutiful, which is expected of her, you know, a woman, her age and of her station. And that now what we're seeing is just more shit getting piled on her that she is just expected to do because that is her duty.
Yeah.
You know? And we've seen that happen with a lot of characters in this world, this sort of oppressive nature of what is duty. I mean, Viserys cries about it this whole episode. You know, everybody keeps telling him how, you know, as king, it's your duty to get married.
Yeah.
And he is just low-key, like, not even low-key, he's straight up like, yeah, I'm not even thinking about that. You know, I'm really not. I'm not thinking about any of this right now. It's been 6 months. So even when he has that moment where the model breaks and him and Alicent pick it up and they have sort of that moment, I'll be honest, and I might be really off base here, I didn't find it to be particularly sexual.
Okay.
I really didn't. I don't know why, because usually, you know, an age difference like that, clearly her father is sending her in, you know, so she can be on the short list for queen, hoping that this works out, and then it does. But it felt a lot like Viserys seems to me like somebody in this time who really not that he wants to hide, but that he kind of wants to be alone with his grief, you know? And she literally was just like keeping him company, and he found her company like reassuring and comforting.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I don't even think that that moment is sexual exactly. It was just more of a, like, the contact is prolonged in a way that felt like it was suggestive and not sexually necessarily, but like there has been a very, for lack of a better word, a professional distance between the two of them in the scenes we've seen them in. And a decorum, I guess, that's like so rigid. And that's the first break we have seen where you're touching the king. It's a pretty big deal. And it just felt significant to me, like it's an acknowledgement of the intimacy of their relationship that he doesn't really have with anybody.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That I feel like I agree with, that there is a, that, and it's kind of what I was getting to, that he has developed this relationship with Allison that he doesn't really have with anyone else. Mm-hmm. I agree, too, that there's a level of intimacy between the two of them that has developed.
Yeah.
My point was mostly just that intimacy doesn't always equal sexual attraction mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. sexual relationship, which is then sort of like, oh, but it looks like the show is going to do that, though. So gotcha. I guess it's moot.
Well, but, I mean, we'll see what happens. But even if he chose her, it's not necessarily moot because, as you're saying, he doesn't really have this with anyone else. So it could be that he's just choosing somebody that's going to be the least painful.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, when he meets Corliss and Rhaenys in the gardens and they give their proposition, which, you know, it's a weird thing to find yourself rooting for the marriage to the 12-year-old. You know, it's a real uncomfortable place to find yourself. But I have to say, if I'm going to immerse myself in this world, which the fandom continues to tell me, if I'm going to do that, then you have to like adjust to the sort of ways of the times, right? Mm-hmm. The mores of the time. So I have decided that this is a world where siblings and cousins and uncles and nieces fuck. This is a world where dragons exist.
Yep.
And this is a world where powerful men often marry very young women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it works. So once I get over that, I'm listening to Corliss and Rhaenys, and I'm like, they are making some excellent points.
Mm-hmm.
This is the marriage that you do to save the fucking union. This is what you do to save the realm.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing, too, because, like, obviously, I love the casting for Corliss and Rhaena's daughter because she really does look so young.
Mm-hmm.
Allison,
she looks a lot younger than fucking 12, which is how old she's supposed to be.
Yeah. Allison, I think in real life is like 23 or something. And she comes across to me a lot older than 15, which is what she's supposed to be. But I don't hold that against them or anything. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's just like the contrast I appreciate because there's my very mild spoiler, but way later on, like a generation or two later, there's a whole thing where the king has to pick a wife and there's a parade of women that get brought before him. And the one that is so dazzlingly beautiful, described as she sparkled when she walked in, that he chooses, is 6.
No, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it's just like that throughout. Like, the age is that's the most extreme case mm-hmm. in terms of it being just straight up, we're going to say the 6-year-old was beautiful. But it has often kind of felt like the age differences haven't been as extreme because of the way that the very understandably an underage actress is not going to be permitted to perform right. in scenes in the right. way they would need. So they're hiring right. people who are above age
right.
and they have to age them down. And this is a really good opportunity because he doesn't actually wind up choosing the little girl right. to show like the possibility of that was yeah. very real
yeah.
and let us be super uncomfortable with it and acknowledge it as a thing that happened and was actually being yeah. encouraged yeah. But
I think another thing that they did, and I don't know if this was done on purpose or not, or it could be done again in this sort of, because Viserys is, it's clear that Viserys is not interested in this union and that he is bothered by her age, mm-hmm. right? Now, I don't know how old Emma was when they were married, you know? I don't yeah. know. But clearly at this point, he is uncomfortable with her being 12 to the point where someone actually reminds him that, you know, she'll get older, you know? But that they chose to cast this actress as age appropriate for what she's playing, it allows the audience to sort of be like, you know what? Viserys is right. because that is a fucking child,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to what the world is constantly asking us to do, which is to understand the rules of how it works here, and then looking at this being like, he is making a fucking dumbass mistake. But because this little girl is literally a little girl, you're like, but yeah, he's right to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, which is, I guess it's just part of what you have to do when you're writing a TV show, and you have to give a really strong personality to a character who is kind of sketchy in the book because of the way that book is written. I would argue Viserys actually has a pretty well outlined personality that they just chose to totally ignore. Mm. But let's say that it's sketchy and they want to do something and they're choosing to make him foolish, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're choosing to make him sort of ignore his duties in favor of what his scruples and feelings are instead. Right. It's interesting that they decided to try and make him more likable in a way by putting him in positions like this where you can understand somewhat why he is making the choice he is. And it feels like the ethical choice.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's actually the, like, if you step back and look at the implications of all of it together, might be the less ethical choice.
Yeah, this is a terrible choice.
Yeah, you know?
This is a terrible decision as a king when you are supposed to be considering the well-being of your entire realm that you are responsible and the steward of, mm-hmm. right? You have these threats that people have pointed out to you multiple times in this episode alone, that you are starting to appear weak,
mm-hmm.
that your line is just a daughter that you've declared, you know, will inherit the throne, which a lot of people don't feel great about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you also have in your inner circle a family, Corlys and Rhaenys, who, yeah, they are your staunch supporters, but also they are real life enemies,
mm-hmm,
you know, mm-hmm. And you could, and I think the guy he goes, one of the people Viserys goes to, there's a guy at the small council meeting room alone. I think it's Strong. And then later with Otto, they're both like, this would help heal that wound.
Yeah.
This is a good way to prevent further fraction. Mm-hmm. Fraction?
Friction?
Faction.
Oh, faction. Factions from forming. I got you. Yeah. I thought you were saying friction, like, because that would also work.
Yeah. But, and you know, and is this is a way to really kill like three or four different birds with mm-hmm. one stone. This is the choice that he should be making as king. But he doesn't, because he doesn't feel like it's a good idea to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of a, I don't know. I get what they're doing here, but I don't know about this whole, because I'm going to jump ahead. Forgive me. We don't have the dialogue in front of us. But what he decides to do is to announce to everybody who he has chosen without actually consulting a single person about it first.
Yeah, it doesn't appear that he's had a conversation with anybody.
Nobody.
Everybody,
he hasn't talked to
Corlys. Surprised.
He hasn't talked to his daughter. He, of course, hasn't talked to Allison or her father.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, about being king, though, right?
But it's the thing is, again, it's not.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say there was a whole bit at some point where they make it very clear that this decision for a wife is a matter for the small council.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then he goes and makes a sort of unilateral decision anyway.
Yeah.
Without anybody's input. When I say that's the thing about being a king, I don't necessarily mean that he is following the proper procedure. What I mean is, if this had been brought to the council and everybody said their piece, ultimately, does he get to decide?
I mean, he does, but the difference would be, and this is going to sound so weird in this context, but the lack of professionalism here in deciding to drop it on everybody in such a shocking way, it feels like
that's him.
I don't buy it. I don't.
Starking it up.
It feels like the show is making him a real idiot because they just need him to be. And it doesn't feel like the kind of thing a king that is as allegedly conscious of everybody and trying to like not step on toes or take things too far, the way he would handle it. It doesn't feel right to me. It just feels like it's a big dramatic moment where they had to have him act like an idiot to have the open-mouthed small council and his offended daughter storming out of the room. And it just feels false to me. Like, I just feel like his character is like inconsistent in terms of what his priorities are supposed to be. The only consistent thing with his character is that he makes bad decisions. But the bad decisions never really all seem to come from like the same place. Do you know what I'm saying? They all feel like fueled by different things. And there's like a real coldness to some of them. And then there's too much softness in others. And I'm not getting it. And especially, I will never get over them having him having them murder his wife in front of him. And me supposedly having to think that he is like a guy who cares and is sweet now after allowing them to do that. I just can't get past that as well.
I'm trying to, there's a couple of different things going on there. I'm not 100% sure if we're supposed to believe that he's sweet. I don't know exactly. Like, again, having read the books, I don't know if it's hard for me to say, oh, they've made the character, you know, dumber for TV, because that's just how TV works, you know?
Right. And I don't even think that's necessarily true, because there's not an indication of him being super intelligent or anything. He just had a very distinct personality that he doesn't have here.
Right.
But
And then the way he tells everybody who he's going to marry is like he announces his choice, but it's at the council meeting, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe he was like, if there's going to be a discussion about it, let's have it now. I've told you who I've decided to marry. Like, what say ye?
Right, right.
But it wasn't done in a way. And the other thing is, I don't know. Like, when you say this is a decision, when they say this is a decision for the small council to make as far as who you're going to marry next, feels like it's supposed to be much more sort of like collaborative.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there is definitely going to be a limit to collaboration when somebody is named king and, you know, gets the say of everything all the time, everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that's why it feels like while you say it doesn't seem like the way that, you know, he would do this, in my mind, it feels very much like, yeah, this is how that would go.
Yeah, I think that the problem I'm having here is that him deciding to let them kill his wife is supposed to be born of his desperation to have an heir, because he recognizes how incredibly important that is. And he is willing to sacrifice his wife's last moments and have her be like cut up,
mm-hmm.
because he is so devoted to doing what he has to as king. And then everything else about him has been, but I don't want to, even though that's the whole point. Like, them talking about the succession right after his wife's funeral, and he flips out. And I'm just like, but you have to know, like, this is just how it works. And then, my wife only died 6 months ago. I don't want to think about getting married again. Who fucking cares, dude? You're the king. You know what's expected of you. Allegedly, that's why you did this other horrible thing, because you were willing to make sacrifices because you knew what was expected of you and necessary. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, he just doesn't anymore. You know, like, he just acts like he's new. Like, he doesn't know what being king means.
I think that is part of what, for me, is happening with him, whether I buy it or not. I think that we talked about this a little bit, too, in the first episode. I think that we are supposed to look at this man who did this horrendous thing in the name of duty, right? And ended up empty-handed. No wife and no son. So now he's done with that, right? And names his daughter heir. And is willing to, like, take 6 months and even longer if people would get off of his back about being, you know, getting remarried. Because, you know, he's not sacrificing anything more. Right? Because he's just made this great sacrifice, because he views it not as participating in his wife's murder, but views it as a sacrifice, this great sacrifice that he just made. Right? And what's curious to me, not to get bogged down in just this moment, because this is only episode two, but what I'm curious about is, as of right now, when everybody is talking to him about the need to beef up the line, right? You need to have more children, because then that ends up becoming a conversation with Rhaenys later and Rhaenyra. I'm very curious, this 180 that he's done after his wife is gone and he's named his only child, who's a woman, you know, as heir, because he's new now.
Mm-hmm.
How long does that last? Like, does that flip get switched after he's married and she finally gets pregnant? Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, is this a real change, or is this just temporary because of his recent loss? Like, that's where my interest is and what I'm looking to see going forward.
All right. I mean, I can see what you're saying. If that is really what it is, I'm not getting that from the way they're framing everything. So I wish it was a little bit more explicit that he was it doesn't, like, the sense of his reaction to the demands being placed on him doesn't feel like it's him suddenly drawing a line. It feels like a man who is just not used to being king and is being constantly surprised at the fact that things are expected of him. But if it was what you're saying, I wish that it felt more like purposeful on his part, that he was, like, really kind of creating a boundary because he felt a way and was explicitly more giving his small council a fuck you, because I've already done some shit and you don't even know what it was like and I can't bear it anymore. But it just doesn't feel like that. It feels really childish.
I don't know if he has enough self-awareness to even know what he's doing. Like, I don't mean to ascribe to him some great sense of, no, I've had enough and I'm putting my foot down. I mean in a reaction that he's having, where he's feeling a little low-key, like, I just lost everything, and for what? And now I'm kind of salty about it. Kind of thing.
I mean, and that's fine. I'm just talking about for it to come across on a show.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like if that's what they're trying to do, they're failing for me at getting that really across. And maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe other people watching or listening to us talk about this are like, no, I totally see that. And if so, then it's just not hitting for me. But I'm getting impatient, because it's almost like they're trying to make him the, like, show, the audience surrogate. You know how there's always somebody who is in the mix speaking, like, as the audience and seeming to be sort of separate from things, like, I can't believe this is. And he is the one that's sort of playing that role here.
Oh, really?
Where he is like, I just buried my wife. How can you be asking me about this? Or this girl is 12 years old. How can you be asking me about this? And he is not the appropriate one to give that to. I feel like he is just, the whole vibe for him is somebody who just got dropped into Westeros and doesn't know how anything works. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't feel like he's the surrogate for me at all.
Who's your surrogate?
I haven't really decided yet.
Okay.
Who feels like is the person that sort of like you described, they're just here looking at everybody and just being like, the fuck is going on here? I haven't gotten anybody that's like resonated with me in that way yet. So, all right. So they have proposed this marriage to their daughter, Lena. Lena is adorable.
She's very cute. I do not like that wig, though.
I mean, all right, Kat, stop that. the wigs.
Yeah, the wigs. They're their own whole episode.
They really are. and then we have dinner with Viserys and Rhaenyra, who it's so awkward and tense.
Oh my god.
But they oh my god, Kat, stop it. I'm so sorry, you guys. She's climbing up the back of the chair to get to my hair. I gotta stop putting my hair up in a high ponytail when I record, because this is out of hand. So they're having this really awkward father-daughter, very elaborate dinner. It's like 48 courses on that table for two people.
No, thank you. Not that I have a problem with 48 courses, but just not with him. Thank you, but no, I'll pass.
And he tells her, you know, I miss your mother. I loved her very. Oh my god, stop it!
Oh my god, I'm so sorry. I'm gonna just pause here.
Back.
Okay.
So you're talking about the mother, and there's this really sweet moment where Rhaenyra does genuinely seem like, God, I'm really fucking glad you said that, because mm-hmm. I've been walking around here feeling like I've been alone in my grief for fucking half a year.
Yeah.
Because you have been completely emotionally unavailable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about the fact that we know where he has been emotionally, and that has been with Allison.
Yeah.
It's, in my opinion, that makes his sort of abandonment of Rhaenyra all the more egregious.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think that I had made a joke last time about, can you, you know, stay friends with your best friend if she's fucking your dad? It doesn't look good. Mm. And the way Rhaenyra, you know, reacts to that news, I mean, you know, her immediate reaction anyway is not great. But I wonder if and when she realizes that her father has not been available to her, but has been having these moments where they have talked, I think, a lot about grief and loss, because Alice has lost her mother, right?
Yep.
That her father has been able to do that with someone else and hasn't been available to her. And I'm curious how that is going to go over, or if she will even care. You know, Rhaenyra may not care about that, but
not only her father, but her best friend. So as mm-hmm. far as we see, who is not yep. comforting her best friend.
Yeah. The only reason I didn't bring that up initially is because we have that bit where she takes her to the Sept.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that has been happening
consistently.
You know, I know that before Emma died in the first episode, they made it very clear to us that they were very close friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we are supposed to understand that some distance has occurred in the last 6 months or not. Like I was thinking about that actually when they had the scene at the Sept. I was trying to get a feel like, do they not hang out as much anymore? Is this like a one-off, you know? But I couldn't really tell. So I don't know. Yeah, you know. I mean, like, Allison is not allowed to tell Rhaenyra, you know, that she's been spending this time with her father. So has she been lying?
Yeah, that's my question, is like, how is she explaining all of her time being taken up?
You know, I'm really curious about that as well.
Because I feel like that is something with only these two, like, highborn women of the same age living in the house. I'm assuming Rhaenyra would be extremely aware that her friend isn't around the way she normally is. So
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, she's... Well, when she's in the room with him in this episode, it's still light outside. So, because I was about to say maybe she just goes... Because the first time she goes to visit the king, it's in the evening. You know, it's late and her dad sends her over there. So I was about to say maybe she just goes late at night, you know, when no one is going to miss her.
Mm-hmm.
But the scene where they drop the piece, I'm pretty sure it's light outside. So that doesn't really hold too much water.
Well, who knows? Hmm. But yeah, they have their moment in the sept. I really do love the design of the sept and the whole way that the worship of the seven works as being faces of one god. And so they're all encircling this central point.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kneel at any spot on that point to face a particular icon, I guess. Or you could just be praying to the many-faced god all at once. Like, there's just something really neat about the concept of this god and the way that they've designed the septs to represent that I think it's one step away from becoming a religion that would be like actually legit in our world. And somebody would just be like, you know what, we're just gonna Game of Thrones this. So
yeah, I feel like, I wish I knew more about it, but I feel like in certain religious traditions, especially when you start talking about a lot of like African ancestral religions where they have like multiple deities,
mm-hmm.
but other religions as well have, you know, what is it called?
Multitheistic.
I think that's the word.
Yeah.
Where you have different facets, you know, you have mm-hmm. different gods that represent different sort of parts of us as people, but also of a godhead, and that you can appeal to the ones that are most fitting to your particular circumstance, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. You can ask the mother for this or the, you know, the warrior for that, you know?
Yeah.
I like it. Maybe it's because we're just living in an age where we feel like we should have all the options, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, and that's like part of the thing with Catholicism is that we're going to have God, and that's the thing. But like secretly also we have Mary for the mommy thing. So definitely get in on that. Also, we have this book of saints and there's one for every day of the year. Right? Actually, there's like four for this one day and six for this other day.
You just go open up the catalog and go saint shopping.
Exactly. So it's like, I lost my keys. Who do I pray to? Saint Anthony. Okay. I need to heal my cat. Who do I pray to? Saint Francis. Okay. And they really cashed in on that, I feel
they
like.
They really do have something going. They mm-hmm. got something right with that. I have to agree.
I will never forget my mom telling me every time I lost anything to pray to Saint Anthony. I was just like.
Was your mom even Catholic?
No. No, she sure wasn't. My mom is like the appropriation queen. No offense, mom, but you really are. And you know that. It's fine. And she would just take whatever she likes out of anything. So, yeah. And the one time that I really seriously did it, it was so funny. A friend of mine had lost her backpack and it was at boarding school. And I became my mom and was like, have you prayed to St. Anthony? And she was like, no, what? And I was like, come here. And I took her hands and we bowed our heads and we prayed to St. Anthony. And she walked up the steps and found her backpack literally like three steps away and was like, it worked. And I was like, did it? Or was your backpack just three steps away? I don't know. Who's to say?
It's all a great mystery.
St. Anthony had her backpack and carried it over and was like, it's right here, three steps away. I dropped it off.
I thought you were going to say St. Anthony had her back.
That too, for sure. Hey, Saint Tony, what's up?
All right, so then we find Viserys getting, this man is falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
He is this wound that we saw him get on his finger in the first episode, it is 6 months later and that shit is about to fall off.
Yep.
It is like black and it is not looking good. And they're treating it with maggots, which, do you remember when that made a comeback?
No.
So for a little while, I was reading everywhere about how they could use maggots to, I forget what the, debrief?
Debreed.
wounds and whatnot, like let them in, like, go in and they eat all the dead flesh, you know. Mm-hmm. And it really felt like it was everywhere for a very short period of time in like the early to mid 2000s. And your girl was disgusted.
Listen,
I was.
Mm-mm. Nope.
So
let it die.
They stick.
You're telling me that I can either lose the finger or plunge my hand into a bucket of live worms. I'll lose the finger. Thank you.
That
I'm
shit
done.
Looked like they had a giant pot of rice that was bubbling mm-hmm. over next to him. And I, for a second, I was like, what is happening? And then they did the close up and scooped
They're
that
trying
shit
to
up.
Dry him out. They dropped him in water and they had to put him in some rice. See? And then see, check in the morning if he's working okay again.
But the fact that his hand is plunged into this bucket of maggots and then everybody is standing around having this very serious political conversation, mm-hmm. like it's no big deal. Whoo, child.
Nope.
It was a different time. So he, Viserys is telling Otto and the maester is in the background because he's dealing with the hand. Basically about what Corlys and Rhaenys have suggested about marrying Lady Lyanna. Mm-hmm. And Viserys is like, I would like your, you know, opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And Otto, that's when he drops the line, like, that's for the Great Council, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And Viserys is like, I'm talking to you now. But Otto makes a face when he hears that they have suggested this mm-hmm. and is out the gate. Like, they got a lot of nerve. They have reached. That is an overreach. How dare, you know, knowing that you have been sending your daughter into the chambers for 6 months now.
Right.
So again, a whole ass bitch.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone.
And he's so like cautious about when the maester says it will heal the breach. Mm-hmm. He doesn't mm-hmm. actually share his own opinion. He just says the maester's reasoning is sound.
Yep, yep.
So he can't, like, even say, yeah, good idea. He's just like, I really can't fucking make an argument against yep. that, so I guess.
And then what he does, instead of making a real argument, is start talking about his own loss.
Right.
So, and is just like, yeah, you're in a tough spot. I don't envy you. This is a real hard decision you have to make, but doesn't really do much in the way of what I think of as real counsel.
No.
You know, the maester does more of that than Otto it does. And Otto's the fucking hand.
Yeah, because Otto has his fucking deal that he's trying not to upset.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, there's a moment here. Again, I know I'm kind of harping on the whole, is Viserys new? But he does this thing where he says, I'm afraid of what Rhaenyra might think. Sir, what are you doing? What are you doing?
What?
Why?
So, wait, what is the issue? The issue is that he shouldn't be concerned with what she would think?
No, he should not. That's the last thing he should be fucking thinking about. And, like, again, with him, you know, the inconsistency, I'm worried about what she thinks, but I also have completely ignored her and not reached out to her. And I don't know, maybe this is just supposed to be, like, he's just bad at it, at everything. But it's just so, like, you act like you care what she thinks here, but you aren't involving her in any of the actual discussions of anything.
Maybe he only cares in this moment because he literally just had dinner with her and she's finally popped back into his head.
Maybe. Because there's just something so, like, inauthentic about that and the weirdness of it, especially considering that she understands that he is going to have to be remarried. Like, mm-hmm. we know that she is extremely practical about what mm-hmm. has to happen. The thing she gets upset about later isn't his remarrying, it's who he's choosing and the fact right. that he didn't, like, talk to her about it. So that, like, I'm afraid of what she will think right here, which he shouldn't even be saying in front of his counselors, but that's a whole other dumbass decision.
Mm.
And then he just doesn't talk to her about his choice, even though he allegedly cares what she thinks about it. and doesn't like let her know beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, if I were in Rhaenyra's shoes, I'm not going to speak for her because I don't know her character well enough then yet, but I'm going to say I would actually understand choosing Alicent if you sat down and spoke with me about it. It would be the way he chose to drop this that mm-hmm. I would have the problem with. That would right. feel really disrespectful.
Right. And it could be that that is what it is.
It like could be. And that's kind of what I'm saying is like, I don't right. really know what, how they're going to go with that and what she's like actually upset about here. But it's just weird that they have him express that he is worried and then just, again, not engage with her at all about it.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I want to say this much, and it's not necessarily just about the show, but in general, I find that people can be really worried about how somebody takes some news, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet that does not come into play with how they choose to deliver said news. You know, like him saying, I'm worried about what Rhaenyra will think about the whole thing. And then you think to yourself, well, yeah, you wouldn't have to be so worried about it if you just went and had a fucking conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? But you can both be worried about how someone's going to take news simultaneously and decide to not also break that news in any way that's like meaningfully comforting or lessens the blow.
Sure. You
know? It's more like he's saying, when he says, I'm worried about what she's going to think about it, it's more like, not that I care enough about what she thinks to change my decision. It's more like, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Huh. But I don't want her mad at me.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with her being mad at me. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how I took that thing. And that's a lot more cynical than I realized as I was watching it. But I think that's exactly how I took it. Like, oh, you want to do what you want to do. You just would rather it not come with any consequences.
Yeah, I guess maybe this is supposed to be like, I'm talking about how it's not consistent. But if we're just going to say that his fault is that he is weak, it, I guess, is consistent in that he's weak because he worries about what she thinks, but he's also weak because he won't actually deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to still avoid it. Mm-hmm. And basically everything that he is choosing to do is him sidestepping and trying to not be the bad guy and thus making himself the bad guy, which is like a classic recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I can deal with this.
So then we go to his little walk and talk date with Lena.
Yeah, this is not comfortable.
She wants to know where that dragon is. Where is the dragon, sir? I have been reading about her all my life, and I've heard rumors, but you're the king, so you should probably be able to tell me exactly what the what is. Mm-hmm.
She has a very specific goal in mind here, clearly, and I admire that. Yeah. Good for her.
She is trying to end up on a dragon at the end of the day, mm-hmm. and not just on Viserys. Like, that doesn't count. She doesn't want to be on that dragon. She wants a real dragon. It starts out by asking him about riding Beleriand and like what was that like and all that, and then they move on to the one that's missing, whose name I'm hoping comes up in a second. This one that's kind of flown away, is it Vhagar?
Girl.
And she's like the stuff of myth now. Like, she's left, she doesn't have a rider, she's on her own, and no one really knows where she is.
Mm-hmm.
It does read very much like, even though, all right, two things are happening here. One, I think that the fact that this little girl is taking this opportunity to have time with the king alone and just wanting to ask about dragons, because, yeah.
Yep.
Right? Dragons. Yep. And also that even though this is a world of fantasy, there's something particularly childish about, like, being obsessed with the dragons as well.
Yeah. Right?
You know, and so that's sort of like making sure we understand that, you know, this is a little girl. And then they have her say at the end of the date, because she says something she parrots her father about how would a, you know, she'd be a good queen and how it would bring, you know, prosperity and security to the realm and our two great houses and, you know, all that stuff. And he is like, did your father tell you to say that? And it's clear.
Yeah.
It's clear. And so then Viserys says, well, what did your mother tell you? And her response is that I wouldn't have to bed you until I was 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has that exact reaction. It's a deep breath. He sort of flexes his hands like he doesn't know what to do with them. He looks around like, God, really is does. There a fucking hidden camera somewhere? He Which, really yes, there is, sir.
Does. He really, really does. And then it just cuts while he's still like, he looks like, remember Columbo? Like when he would he would do that. That's what he looked like.
Oh, that is what he looked like.
And then it just cuts from that scene altogether because everyone at HBO realized that we had had enough.
We had had it.
So they just cut right to another scene. And it is Rhaenyra and Rhaenys.
So Rhaenys starts off with, it bothers you, does it not? And Rhaenyra turns around and says, my father is a king, and it is his duty to take a new wife and strengthen his line. And she says, yeah, I didn't ask that. I said, does it bother you? Mm-hmm. And she shoots back, does it bother you? And yeah, Rhaenyra like, is like,
that's
yeah.
That's your daughter.
Of course, but also I know how things go. I'm not convinced you know how things go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Rhaenyra basically is like, I feel like you're trying to bait me and I'm not going to fucking rise to it. And she says, no, I'm not trying to bait you. What I'm trying to do is warn you because yeah. I have been you and I had a lot of hopes. And yeah. then I learned the hard way, the way actually works.
Yep, the order of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Rhaenyra says, when I'm queen, I will create a new order. And she says, oh God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be awesome. But they had their chance to do this and they refused already.
Yep.
And Rhaenyra says they refused you in a way that sort of implies like, you are not as worthy or something.
Yeah, it definitely implies that, no, you weren't a victim of a patriarchal system. That was personal. They just didn't think you were good enough.
Exactly. Right?
So the system is not, that same system is not going to have an opportunity to reject me because I am not you. I am better.
Exactly.
Or whatever, you know. I love, too, that Rhaenys is like, yeah. Your father has to take a new wife and blah, blah, blah. But you know, there are going to be children. And mm-hmm. I guarantee you the very good chance is going to be a male. And as soon as that male hits the age of majority, everybody is going to be calling for him to be king. Mm-hmm. All the people that fucking just note for you are going to be calling for him to sit the throne. And you know what? She is not wrong. I'm not convinced that Rhaenyra ends up being queen. I don't know how the story goes, but I don't. And that's another thing too is I don't know. Like mild potential spoilers. I thought that I saw a cast, and there was an older actress playing Rhaenyra, right? But I don't know if we're going to get like a time jump or if I just was mistaken about what the actress was and I was confusing the name. Like maybe, you know, it wasn't an older Rhaenyra at all. It was a name that's like, you know, all the Targaryen names are so similar. So I'm not really sure. I don't know how far in the future this is going to go. But I'm not 100% convinced that she become queen. And I will also say, as far as spoilers go, you guys know that I read shit and then I forget it, but then it gets lodged in my brain in weird ways. And sometimes I know it, but I forgot I know it. I feel like at some point in Game of Thrones, or maybe it was something the show made up, right? Where there was a big thing where someone actually says out loud, no woman has ever sat on an Iron Throne. I feel like maybe somebody said it to Dany, or maybe somebody said it to Cersei. I can't remember exactly. But I think that might also be why I have decided that I don't believe Rhaenyra makes it to the throne.
Gotcha.
But, you know, but like, mm-hmm. it's like fragmented, you know, bits of information that's floating around in my brain. So I just figured I'd share that.
All right. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to see. And I really like when she says they rejected you. Rhaena says, oh, but they make you carry their cups. So, and I really appreciated that, because Rhaenyra really has an attitude here that I felt like was very personal and mean-spirited. And being reminded, they fucking ignore you, girl. Like, you know, she's not even in on those meetings, but I'm sure Corlys tells her.
Oh, yeah.
Every sure. time Rhaenyra yeah. speaks up, they look at each other like they didn't know she could talk, basically. And they don't yeah. like being reminded that she can.
And the thing that Rhaena ends this with is basically like, I'm telling you something that no one else has the balls to fucking tell you to your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they're all supporting this fantasy, you know, that you are going to sit the throne and that you are the heir because your father is currently in power, and to go against him would be like treason. Right. Mm-hmm. So this is all a performance, but I am telling you to your face that it's not going to happen. And she says something like, men would rather torch the realm or torch the entire realm before they like have a queen or mm-hmm. something like that. And when that ending made it, and this is the weird thing too about when somebody is like telling a truth, where her motivation still feels like kind of like bitter, Rhaenys, but she's also like not lying. You know how those yep. two things can be occupying the same place at the same yep. time?
Men would sooner put the realm to the torch than watch a woman occupy the Iron Throne, is the line. Or let a woman occupy. Yeah.
Yeah. And she says that, you know, she tells Rhaenyra that your father is no fool, meaning that, like, he is not really any different than any of these other fucking men.
Which I disagree with. He is absolutely a fool and has no idea. This is the... I'll set things in place so nothing can go wrong before I'll do this all before I die so that I can die knowing it can't possibly have gone any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you hope, but I appreciate having all of the lords come in and swear fealty. I think that was a really good move to like
right.
do what you can to ensure and have it be really public that everybody said this thing. But when it comes down to it, it's just the kind of, you know, I think somebody actually made this comparison in the Discord chat, and I disagreed with it then for like a specific reason that I can't get into because it's a spoiler, but they compared like some of this mindset to Ned Stark like writing a letter and thinking that was going to do something, you know, and Cersei just literally tearing it up and Ned being like, but that was really important. And her being like, yeah, it definitely was. That is why I ripped it up. But just like writing it down, thinking that it's like the fucking actual world. We have all kinds of stuff that we think is because it's like written into law that it simply can't be changed, that people can't just go ahead and do what they want, whether it's written down or not. And it all just really depends on how much of a shit show somebody wants to make something. All it really comes down to is how much of a fuss do you want to make, mm-hmm. and how much money do you have?
That's really the thing, you know, how much money do you have? There's I can't remember the exact quote, but there's a wonderful quote that keeps going around. It talks about how certain people believe that the law is, you know, to protect insiders and bind outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like along those lines, you know, like the laws only serve some and not all, you know. But we all been to them. Because sometimes the consequences are so severe, but then the consequences are not, you know, evenly doled out.
Not even close.
You know? So you could have people, you know, breaking similar laws and having wildly different outcomes, you know? Ned Stark in that damn letter. So then we go to Viserys and Allison again.
Yep.
And he is telling everybody but his daughter about this, you know. So he tells her about this marriage proposal from Corlys and Rhaenys and how he needs a new queen. And she's very comely in the scene and she says all the right things.
You know, comely, I hate that.
You know, that whatever queen he chooses, you know, she sure will be great and fine. And she asks if, you know, who is it? And he tells her it may be Lena. And, you know, she's doing all the right things and saying all the right things. And I don't mean that as shade against her. I just mean she is performing the role that she is meant to perform. Like, she's just doing the thing. And she also gives him that piece of stone work that was broken. And, that really does seem to seal the deal, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those moments that I hate watching because she has got a sense of relief to her when he tells her that they're suggesting somebody else. And she's like, well, the realm would, like, I'm sure they'd find it comforting to have a good queen. And that girl is good and kind. And I'm sure she'll enjoy your company. But then follows it with, as I have, your grace, and then gives him this thing. And I'm like, girl, I get what you were trying to do, and you could have almost done it.
Yeah, right.
But then you just had to do this, and you ruined it.
Yeah. When her father comes in, her father interrupts this to bring news about what Daemon has done, which we should probably get to before it gets too much later. But she gives her father a look. It is a real serious look, the way that she, and it's, and there's no fucking dialogue, you know, between them.
Yeah.
But she is looking at her father and it does, it is not a look of love, y'all.
Nope.
It is not filled with love and admiration and respect. I'm not 100% sure what it's filled with, but I can tell you it's not in there. Yeah.
I do want to talk about her dress real quick because she's wearing this blue gown that's got like a boat neck and it has an interesting, I'm not really sure what this is called. It's like giant eyelets.
She's wearing an Elaine dress.
An Elaine dress?
I'm about to take up more time than we have.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
With the trick mirrors?
Yes. Oh my God. I forgot about that episode. That's a really good one, though, because that is a fucking thing. But yeah, it's like open in this way that's really like fascinating to me because it's a modest dress in its way, but it's also really revealing because of the way that this is designed. And I don't know, it just felt like they were really nicely balancing her having to, you know, be appropriate. But also a little enticing
in
a way that's like maybe she wouldn't quite be aware of.
And again, like we mentioned in the first episode, that she is wearing her mother's dress now. And not like the dress that we saw her in earlier, which was a little bit more similar to the way Rhaenyra is dressed.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah.
And Rhaenyra's dress, which I think is beautiful, though I'm sad that they all seem to be wearing the same clothes every day because I'm here for fashion. But
that's fair.
Rhaenyra's dress is a much higher collar, you know, and her sleeves have this sort of detail going down the side of them, but it's not open like Allison's is. There's like some red sewn in, so it's got kind of like a crisscross pattern
down
the side.
It's like she's got some sort of shift underneath somehow. I don't know.
But there's no skin. You don't see skin like you do with Allison.
Yeah.
So the news, the breaking news, the scandal. Damon's, I don't even know what to call him. Is he trash ass? Is he, what is he?
God, petulant. I don't know either.
He's whatever his ass is doing. he has stolen an egg.
Yep.
And this is bad enough news. And this is why everybody has been called together. This is beyond the pale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all outraged and, you know, they're about to, how do we deal with this? And then she asked the dragon keepers, whose egg did he take?
Yeah.
And before that revelation, Viserys is talking about how they're going to deal with, you know, with Daemon and getting the egg back. And then she asked the real fucking question, which nobody else seemed to think to ask, which, what are y'all doing? And we find out that it is the egg that she had picked to go into her baby brother's cradle.
Yeah.
And that sends Viserys over the edge. That actually lights a little bit of a fire up under his ass. And he's ready to, like, go and, like, be about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is, honestly, I appreciated her going and just getting in his face a little bit. And being like, you know what this meant to me. Mm-hmm. And you know that I'm your obstacle. So if you want to have it out with me, then let's fucking do it. Because I am sick of the shit. And that is really the entire vibe here, is that this feels like a passive aggressive thing. And it's aggressive aggressive, but there's also passive aggressive in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just like that she kind of does the, we were friends a minute ago and now you're doing this. Is this it?
Yeah.
Is this how I can expect you to be? Really?
She is wearing the necklace that Daemon gave her.
Mm-hmm.
They decide that they're going to send people to go. Viserys is going to lead it. And then Otto is like, you can't because you're the king and you can't trust Daemon could do anything. So then Otto is like, I'll go to Dragonstone. Takes an assortment of, you know, men and some Kingsguard and some of the dragon keepers, and they show up to fucking Dragonstone. And it's just a big dick waving contest for a couple of minutes.
Indeed.
You know, Daemon is there with the egg, and he's talking about, you know, his wife is with child, or his soon to be wife is with child. What we find out is complete and utter bullshit. And, you know, there's a moment where, like, swords are drawn and dragons are yelling and things get really, like, out of hand for a second, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody, Otto has to step back because, again, fucking dragons.
Yep.
Right? And it's this almost, like, not really a stalemate, but kind of, because it's a game of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to blink first, right? And then that is when she shows up.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I know it's like hokey or whatever. Maybe I'm like easy. Whatever. I don't care. There's a standoff and then you hear a dragon in the distance and you're just like, wait a minute, what? And she comes swooping in and she's wearing her bomb ass dragon riding gear, which has like the dragon scales on it, like her all around her shoulder and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just as dope.
Yep.
And she just shows up, tells everybody, they didn't have to tell them, they just get the fuck out the way. There's also a beautiful shot of Dragonstone, I thought, when they first show up.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to fast forward to that spot.
It's beautiful. And then they're walking in through the mist and everything, which is what we heard so much about Dragonstone in the books, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to see. Like, shit is misty as hell. You can't see shit.
Yeah, it's very, like, I'm wondering how much of it is added so that, you know, they're covering up the fact that it's only a model, but it doesn't matter because it's extremely effective for the way that the atmosphere should be here.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was just beautiful. And then like when they finally are facing off on the bridge, and the castle is behind Daemon, you know, it's just this gorgeous shot. And he is just being such a dick.
Yeah.
And then Otto also is really talking like, you know, there's not a dragon. And I really hate to keep harping on that. But, like, Otto is really, he's out here making very big threats.
Mm-hmm.
Viserys is just like, where's the king now? I don't even see him.
You mean Daemon.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Daemon does. Kristen gets a really nice, that's why you thought his name was Crispin. Because Daemon calls him Crispin.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't realize that I did
that. He knows his name isn't. He calls him Crispin, and then Kristen has to be Kristen. He's like, ah, yes, my mistake, I had forgotten.
Oh my God, and then, I didn't realize that was
and then he was like, well, you may remember when I knocked you off that horse that time.
I love it. He has to bring the egg out with him, too.
Oh yeah, like, he's tossing it around.
Yeah, he's just trying to provoke. It's just, honestly, when it comes down to it, so much of this is all, and by this I mean like the realm and mm-hmm. the way it works is just little boys
mm-hmm.
with attitudes.
Yeah. Daemon is like, this is a tradition. I have a right to this egg as a Targaryen. And then Otto is like, no, that's only for basically purebloods. You're a little whore and your bastard kid don't get it,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is just gross in and of itself.
Yep.
And there's a moment where I think somebody says something a little bit nasty. I think it's Otto says something kind of reckless about Missaria, I think.
Lady Missaria is to be my wife. And he says, this is an abomination. With every breath you soil your father, your brother's reign and your house. And then he says, and the city watch is just aiding you in your treason. And Daemon is like, you lead me head of the city watch. They're loyal to me. And maybe you should have thought of that. But yeah, the Missaria's dress here. And the cloak.
Oh, it's fucking bananas. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. And love her entire look.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, the thing that like provokes is even if your death ends in the death of your unborn child and its mother.
Oh, right. Yeah, because Otto says something like, you're never going to survive this. And Daemon is like, well, the plus side is neither will you. Mm-hmm. and then the minute he pulls the sword, his dragon reminds everybody that he's there. And that's when Otto has to be like, put your swords away, you assholes. Put them
yeah.
away.
Yeah. Yep.
And Daemon has this real smug look on his face.
He sure does.
And then that's when we hear that there is another dragon on the scene. And it is Rhaenyra. And when he sees her, there is a glint of real pride and satisfaction. And sort of like... you know? Didn't it seem like it?
No, his I face? Definitely think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, his face was like, uh-huh. This is what I would expect, like, you know, somebody to fucking do. This is how you respond when someone does some bullshit like this.
I love how she shows up, too, because you don't see her. You hear the call, and you see the clouds sort of swell
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
she's underneath cloud cover. Mm-hmm. And then she just comes bursting up over the edge. And I was like, oh, that was a really yeah. dope way to enter. Yeah.
And she walks up. They try to like tell her she shouldn't be here. And she
just lands on this little walkway and destroys the fucking mm-hmm. like architecture in this. I was just like, you know what? Good. Go ahead. Ruin his
that
shit.
Bridge. And she says to him, once, you know, Otto or somebody else is, you know, like, you're not supposed to be here. It's too dangerous. And she basically threatens them with her own dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to be careful, you know. She's very protective of me. And then she comes up and she starts talking to Daemon in Valyrian. And the first thing she says is, this is my house, bitch.
Yep.
You are checked up in my house.
Yep. I have to mention this as well. She swoops down, lands in that spot, and then the next thing we know, she's like already on the walkway. I want to see the awkward climbing down. No, we
didn't get that.
I want to see it. I want to see, and I know it's not real. This is not a real dragon. Therefore, it cannot be done in a way that would not be a huge pain and also very undignified to watch. But that's kind of my point, is that I want to see the really undignified parts of being a boss ass dragon rider is that you kind of have to like scramble. And if you're wearing a cloak, it's going to get like stuck on some of the spiny bits and maybe like hang you up for a second. And just the variety of things that could go wrong. But yeah, walks up. This is my castle you're living in. He says, not until you come of age. And she says, you've angered your king. And he says, I don't see why. This is a day of celebration. I am to be wed. Sir, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
And when does Miss Aria walk away? Is it right when he says, I was to be wed on the morrow or something?
Yeah, she says something about the egg for the cradle. And he says, I want the same for my child. And she says, you have a child. And he looks at Miss Aria and says, one day.
Right.
And that's when she walks away.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she, we find out, wasn't really hip to everything that he had been claiming.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And then Rhaenyra is just like, look, I am, all of this theater is because you're mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you think I took your rightful spot.
Yep.
So you want to kill me? I'm right here.
Yeah.
Do it. Get me out of the way. You know? And of course he cannot.
She
wins this round by calling his bluff in a very straightforward way.
Mm-hmm.
It avoids all of this other nonsense that was happening, you know, that between Otto and Daemon, who we know have a history that's not great. You know, it just cuts through all of this bullshit that we're watching and gets to the heart of the matter. Now, I guess it could have gone another way, but I never for a second thought that it would go any other way than he has to fucking give that dragon back.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't scared for her at any point throughout this at all. I don't personally believe that Daemon is a threat to her in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like a very tense, like, oh shit, what's going to happen? What's he going to do? Kind of moment.
Yeah. So he just chucks the egg to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to bring it over to these two dudes who are holding like a brazier that to keep the egg in, which is like awesome. I just mm-hmm. love that. Mm-hmm. And then she just gets on her dragon and flies away.
Yep.
And then we go to Daemon inside in a mood, going to see his lady, who is also very much in a mood. And we get a bit of a moment here with her basically saying, you knew I didn't want to have children. And that was like part of the whole thing
mm-hmm.
was me not serving that function.
Yep. And she says, I ensured that that would not be the case. And I also told you that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she tells him that, like, I'm not in your service for station. I'm here to be, you know, liberated.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks her, liberated from what? And she says, fear. Because what she is expressing to him is that, yeah, you're the fucking Prince Targaryen and whatever. Nobody's really going to hurt you,
mm-hmm.
but you have put me in a very dangerous position. Did you even fucking think about that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you telling them that we're married and that you put a child in me, like that is a direct threat. Me carrying a child of yours, you know,
yeah.
You're just out here waving my name around like to your own ends without even thinking about what that could mean for me. And he gets offended, kind of like, well, I would never let anything hurt you, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're here at Dragonstone and you're very, very safe. Completely missing her point.
Yeah.
You know, that she is with him so she doesn't have to live a life of fear. She's telling him that she has been traded and slaved and, you know, whatever other horrible things have happened her entire life. And that she is trying to get away from that. And it's just... yeah, she's not here for it.
No. Nope.
It's just a complete lack of consideration for her well-being. She's just like using her like a toy, like a pawn,
mm-hmm.
you know, in his own like ego game that he's got going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Which is just the whole deal with women in this world, which is...
Yeah, highborn or not, right?
Yeah.
It's like the best we can hope for is to be useful as a pawn in some fucking fashion,
mm-hmm.
you know, What did you think about her accent?
I had no idea what to think. It sounds French.
So it's got a lot of couple things happening, right?
Yeah, I don't know what they were going for or if this is her real accent or
I what? Don't even know if I like I saw some people saying they didn't like it. I didn't dislike it, but I was like, what's happening? You know, it was, I was just like, because she spoke in the first episode and I don't recall having a reaction to anything, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I want to go back and watch the bit she's in the first episode and compare it, because this time she gets to speak much longer, right?
Yeah.
She has a little bit of a monologue here that she didn't really get in the first one, but I don't recall her accent jumping out at me in the first episode. This time I like sat up. I was like, hold up.
Yeah, it felt very French, and then it didn't, and then it did again, and I was right. Just kind of like, all right, sure, I guess.
It did, and then it didn't, and then it did again.
So this is when Viserys goes and talks to, I think Robert Strong is his first name.
Strong that sits on a small council that kept getting interrupted every time he tried to speak.
And he says, what's the deal, do you think, with Corlys? Because I know he envies me, and this guy is like, you're a fucking king, man.
Yeah. Well,
of course he's going to envy you. That's everybody envies you.
Lionel. His name is Lionel.
Lionel Strong. Okay, I was real off on that. Oh, that's a different Strong. I got myself mixed up. But he asks this, you know, marriage that they're proposing. He's like, what do you think of it? And the guy is just like, seems like a really good idea to me. Mm-hmm, I get it. Mm-hmm. She's real young. She'll mature. And I just think it makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
And then again, I didn't ask to get remarried. Bitch, shut up.
Yeah.
I'm literally just going to record myself saying, bitch, shut up, and use that as a sound that I will invoke anytime on this, because he is just hiring me out.
Yeah, this guy is making all of the great arguments again, right? This is now the third time that he's hearing these arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he's really stuck on the, I never asked to remarry. I shouldn't have to do this.
Yeah.
And, the guy is just Strong is just like, look, what do you think would happen if I were to reject this proposal, though?
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like you don't even need to ask. You already know the answer to that. So maybe you were hoping this guy would say something that you would wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not.
Yep.
And he basically runs down the risks of saying no to this proposition, to this proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And Viserys's response to that is, one, because Strong is like, you know, Driftwood is our ally. He is master of ships, the wealthiest family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We need him.
Yeah.
And Viserys is like, well, first of all, Corlys would never be so petty to punish the realm because he was like angry at me, which, sir, what? And then secondly, he's like, and who is he to hector me? I'm the king, god damn it. So he's hearing real talk.
Mm-hmm.
From Lionel Strong, and he is reacting with just nonsense.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. He is, it's almost like he just wants to keep asking people until someone tells him what he wants to hear.
That's exactly what's going on.
And this is when they get interrupted, and he finds out that his daughter is back from her little dragon jaunt.
The dragon jaunt. Coming to a theater near you. And he is just straight up mad at her, and I was resentful. She solved your fucking problem, sir.
But she left without permission, and she acted without the crown's leave, Natasha.
Yeah, because the crown's leave is dumb and stupid and bad. The crown should leave. Because it's useless here. It's bad.
He starts with disobeyed me, no permission. And then he ends with You could have been killed, which feels like a very fatherly kind of like, I don't want anything bad to happen to you. Mm-hmm. And then he rounds around to the fact that she's his only heir and she could have decimated their bloodline. Mm-hmm. Like, boom, it would have been done. And then they have a moment where after he, I guess, is blown off steam, he sits down and has to admit.
Well, she says, may I sit, and just walks past him and sits down.
Oh, my God. That's right.
In a pretty boss move.
That's right. Then he sits down afterwards. You're right. She sits down first.
But yeah. And she's like, and he says, what were you thinking? And she's like, I got the egg back and I didn't shed any blood, which I don't think Otto could have managed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what you want. And he sort of like relents at this point.
Mm-hmm. And then does that thing where he's just like, you know, mm-hmm. you're just like your mother, which is sort of signifying that we're done with the sort of reprimand.
Yeah.
You know, from the king. And now I am your father sitting with you talking about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, I didn't know what to say to you in the aftermath. I struggled to realize that my daughter had so quickly grown, had so quickly become a woman grown. But I know she understands what is now expected of me.
Yeah.
And this is when you would say the thing.
Yeah, you could have right
and
here.
This is really it.
Yeah. But he doesn't want to ruin this moment because he doesn't want her reaction to it. You know, mm-hmm. they're having this moment, this beautiful moment where he feels like he's finally being able to speak to her. And she, and I think also, I don't know if he says it to Alicent when they're talking about like, oh, I'm afraid to talk to her. I'd rather talk to a dragon. But I think that he doesn't want to have these conversations with her because he is waiting for her to blame him for what happened to her mother. It's like, if I don't stand still long enough, then she can't catch me, you know? Like, he's almost afraid that if we talk too real, she's going to be like, what the fuck, dude?
That's know? Interesting because it didn't even occur to me that she, like, knew anything.
I mean, I don't know how much she knows or not, but she was worried for her mother before childbirth. And she is, even though we don't see scenes of it, we know from the bathroom scene that that Emma had had all of these pregnancies that didn't go well. Rhaenyra is definitely old enough to remember some of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that her father would even insist that her mother get pregnant this one last time. Mm-hmm. That's enough for her to be like, why would you do that? And I blame mm-hmm. you for mother dying. Never mind the explicit part that he played in how she died, mm-hmm. you know.
Gotcha.
Because technically she was going to die anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's enough, in my opinion, for Rhaenyra to kind of be like, what the fuck, Dad? Was it really worth it? You know?
Yeah.
So he has this moment with her where it's like they're finally on the same page and having an understanding. And yeah, this would have been a great time to say, hey, I made a decision. But he doesn't want to face that. He doesn't want to face what she might say about it, what she might feel about it.
Even so in this moment, she's like, mother would understand even that you mm-hmm. have to get remarried, just like I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut away.
Yep.
And I was a little bit like, I want to see how the rest of that conversation would go. But it doesn't matter because we know the one thing it didn't go. And
yeah, clearly, right? Because it cuts to the big announcement in the small council mm-hmm. about who's going to marry. And we know. We don't know what else happened in that conversation, but you're absolutely right. We know what didn't happen because the way she reacts to the news.
Yeah.
I'm curious. Do you think he told her a different name and then changed overnight?
No, I don't think he told her shit.
Okay. All right. So to say, oh, did I talk about the necklace, though?
That she was wearing it?
That she was wearing. She's wearing the necklace Damon gave her when they find out he stole the egg. In this scene where he announces she's not wearing it anymore.
Mm, okay. So it's sort of to be like, yeah, fuck that guy now.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Because the dress is the same dress. So it's not like she's matching. You know, like she took it off because it didn't match.
So, yeah, he does the incredibly unkingly thing of telling them that he's going to take a wife. And not only does he insult Corlys by rejecting the offer, he does it incredibly publicly, brutally, and it's just such a complete bullshit move. It's so bad.
And even beyond like the way it's announced and how just like poorly planned that is, and it's an insult to Corlys that he rejects his daughter, but also who he's rejecting his daughter for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, no shade, but Allison isn't anywhere close to being of a pedigree that should be getting to marry the king.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When there are people like Lady Lyanna around, you know, mm-hmm. like, because I know people would be like, well, you know, Sansa Stark was going to marry the king, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the Hightowers or of a station of the Starks at the time we met them in Game of Thrones, right?
I would say yes, because he's the Hand.
Right, he's the Hand, but that is, so that's a high station, but it doesn't, in my opinion, come anywhere close to the claim that Corlys is making.
No, definitely right? not. Who calls it an absurdity?
Yeah.
Which I rather like. And he's like, my house is Valyrian. And Viserys says, and I am the king. And then Corlys looks over at Otto, who is staring straight at him in a how do you like yeah, them apples kind of face.
Yeah, he really is.
And Allison looks like she's about to cry. And she's like been looking at Rhaenyra this entire time. And finally the king says Rhaenyra's name. And that's when she like turns around and leaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there, this moment here for me really gives that the two of them were into each other. And you're talking about like the repression for, you know, possibility with her messing her fingers up. Just felt for me like, yeah, maybe that's what she's repressing, yeah. you know?
I'll be honest, I don't really have a strong opinion on that,
mm-hmm.
Whether or not they were in a relationship of any kind, you know, whether it was like romantic or sexual.
I don't think that they were in, but I think they just had feelings for each other.
Yeah. I don't really know. There's a part of me that like I'm remembering. It's a weird thing because I don't want to do that thing where like you erase queerness from characters.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there is a very specific type of friendship I think that a lot of us forget as we get older. Do you remember how intense your friendships were with other girls when you were, like, that age?
No, because no. I didn't have that.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it was not there, like that for me.
There were relationships I had that were just so intensely intertwined, you know, where they felt like more than any like romantic relationship I had at the time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That I guess you could, from the outside, I guess people could look at it and be like, oh, I wonder if something's going on there, mm-hmm. you know, but it wasn't, it was just that the emotional connection was so strong. And like, it was like a soulmate
mm-hmm.
without mm-hmm. like romance being attached to it. So I kind of viewed their relationship through that lens because that's my own experience. So I really don't know if I have an opinion on whether or not they were really like a, you know,
yeah,
like a couple or not or whatever. Because I just sort of saw it through my own personal experience.
Yeah, maybe the fact that I didn't have that is part of why I'm like, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's intense.
So then we cut to... First, there's like a bust covered in barnacles. And then we have Corlys's monologue about yeah. how his house is actually even older than the Targaryen house, according mm-hmm. to some texts.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's basically like, we just didn't have dragons is the problem.
Yeah.
So we have had to like figure out how to live off the sea. And it has worked out. But that shit is temperamental.
Yeah. He's also very much like, I have had to take everything I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot now. And the reason I have so much is because I was willing to work for it. I was willing to seize it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's a lot of nobody ever gave me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he is attempting to appeal to Daemon on that same level. You know, it, the things that you want, no one is going to just give them to you. You're going to have to take them. And that's how you and I are alike, you know. And Daemon starts talking shit about Viserys. And then Corlys forgets himself and, like, starts to throw a little shade and has to be reminded that, no, I could talk about my brother. You cannot. Which I also really appreciate.
That is... That is such an entire vibe. I really get that. It's like one step away from being self-deprecating and somebody being like, yeah, you can fuck up a lot. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, it looks like we're trying to get a little bit of an alliance going. Which Corlys is trying to entice Daemon into fighting the fight over at the Stepstones.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, once you do that and once we prevail there, then we'll see, you know, like, who's going to stop us after we do that.
My favorite line of this episode is when he's like, the king isn't taking steps, and Daemon says, that was never his strong suit. And he says, what? And Daemon says, being king.
It's really good.
Truly, ouch. But yeah, oh, I'm just seeing now that they're going up to dudes and, like, nailing them in place. I missed that the first time around because they keep cutting to the, like, stepstones and the men who have been, and they're being put in place specifically for the crabs. Somehow I thought that this was, like, he was saying fed the crabs.
Like a battlefield?
Yeah. You know, like, oh, he's the crab feeder because he causes so many corpses.
No,
didn't realize that it was straight up. No, he puts people out as crab food. That's how it works. My bad. Was not getting it.
So, yeah, that's how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, excuse me.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. It's already almost. How long have we been recording?
Do you really want to know this?
It is already 5. I was supposed to have dinner at 5.
Girl, 2 hours.
4:45.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It got away from us.
So yeah, it basically ends with, like, we are the realm's second sons. Our worth is not given. It must be made. And Daemon is contemplating with his fucking face.
With his fucking face.
With his fucking face, you know. And we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, when we're talking about, like, timing, because we jumped 6 months from the first episode to this one. I'm really curious how time is going to move in this show. Like, will the next episode be a wedding? Will it be the birth of the first child, you know? Will it just be the next day after the announcement? I have no idea. Because, you know, it's only been 2 episodes, so I can't really gauge yet how things are moving. So I'm really curious to see where we start next episode.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Especially because you thought you had seen an actress who was, like, an older version of Rhaenyra.
Yeah. Like, what it was is I thought I saw a bit, and underneath it said, like, young Rhaenyra. Under the chick that we
gotcha.
Know. Right?
Yeah.
And then later I thought I saw one that was just, like, you know, adult Rhaenyra. And I was just like, wait, what? But I don't know if it's the same character or if I just misread. Like, I might have been looking at a picture of Rhaenys and been like, oh, wait, it's the same chick, only she's older now because their names are similar.
Because their names are really similar. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, I'm curious because if we do a time jump, then we get to get into a second part of the story, which is what happens when the king remarries and starts having children, and one of them is a boy. Like, what happens?
What happens? You know?
So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, we do have to wrap this up. I'm already so late.
Okay. Really quick, because we haven't done this in literally like a month and a half, I just want to say hi to new patrons. So we've got Thomas Watkins, Tina, Sarah, Lacey Butka. Hope I'm saying this right. I'm going to put on the cheering for all of you guys. McGrim, Liz, Jacob, Spencer, Avery, Miko, Angela, Piranha, Megan, William, Tyler, and Cindy.
Hello.
Welcome to all of you. Thank you all so much. I think most of you will have gotten the welcome video that I sent, hopefully. Keep an eye out for that. Did you get mine? Did you ever look for it? Yeah.
No, I didn't look for it.
Ugh, all my efforts have gone to waste. That was a feature-length film. It was 2.5 hours, Sean. There were costume changes, and for what?
I have to look for it. It would have come from Patreon?
No, it comes from Bonjoro, the name of the app.
I had to look for it. It might be in my my little spam folder or something.
But yeah, thank you all again so much for signing up. And just to let everybody know, I have changed tiers somewhat. So there is a new reward system. So if you're curious about it, go to patreon.com/unspoiled and you can see what you get with each tier. And now the $5 tier has exclusive access to early ad-free episodes of Song of Ice and Fire, Ted Lasso, and of course Sookie Stackhouse. And $10 and up gets access to live recordings of Ted Lasso and Sookie Stackhouse, which are on Crowdcast. So a little bit of a new thing going on. All right, everybody. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We love you. Hope you're enjoying. Until next time, toodaloo, motherfuckers.
Bye, guys.
Spoiled Network Podcast.